Future-proofing your organization with Lean. The series consists of interviews with a number of leading-edge group practitioners who will share some of their insights into Lean best practices and how your organization can sustain the benefits of Lean over the long term. There is no better time to transform and future-proof your business with Lean, especially given the ongoing impacts of COVID-19 and an uncertain global economic outlook.
On this week's episode, we are joined by Bella Engelbach, author of Creatively Lean, How to Get Out of Your Own Way and Drive Innovation Throughout Your Organization. Bella originally trained as a scientist and worked at a major life sciences company as a process excellence and business improvement leader. She's an expert in continuous improvement, lean product and process development, change management, and is a creative problem-solving facilitator, bringing the worlds of lean and creativity together.
Bella, thank you very much for joining us today. What would you consider lean thinking in manufacturing to be? Would you say it's similar to that in product development?
That is a really interesting question, and I could probably spend about 4 days talking about that. And I don't think that's what you want. And I've been thinking about this for many years. I think that when you are thinking about how does a lean thinker think, what is the thought process, what's happening in their head, the underlying thought process should be the same. It should be exactly the same thing, which is that you're looking at situations, you're creating hypotheses about what's happening, you conduct experiments to see if you can improve what's happening, you learn from those experiments, and you take the information that you've learned and you do something with it. And that's what people refer to as the plan, do, check, act cycle. And so the underlying thinking should be the same. And what happens organizationally should be very similar. So people who are in leadership in a lean organization should be or could be coaching everyone who reports to them on how to be better and better at seeing problems that need to be solved and how to be better at solving those problems and better at really using the information that they gain in doing experiments, whether they're experiments that succeed or experiments that fail. And the people in the organization should be coming in excited about the idea that they're going to get work done and they're going to improve the work. And I think that's identical in product development and in manufacturing. So what's different about product development? Product development really flies in the face of what a lot of people say about lean. In lean, you're always looking through for what's the value, and you define value, or many people define value as being what the customer will pay for. So in looking at a manufacturing plant, you might look at the overall plant and look at all the operations and say, does this operation add something to the product that we are delivering that the customer wants, that the customer will pay for? Because that's how we define value in our society, is will people pay for it? Now, when you think about research and development, customers want new products. They don't want to pay. I don't want to pay for, you know, ostensibly for companies to be running experiments and how to create that new product that fail. I don't want to have to pay a very high price for that. And this, you know, this can sort of get you into a pricing discussion. There's an intrinsic value to products that require more research and development, or where research and development is harder to do, right? But we don't always want to pay for that. And in fact, if you looked at all of R&D in a purely financial, what the customer will pay for value way of looking at it, you would say, well, that's a complete waste. It's 100% waste. Customers really don't want to pay for research and development. And so that means we have to really think about value in research and development in a really different way. And what people are really paying for is the knowledge that the organization is developing in research and development. So that might be knowledge about you as a customer. What do you want? What do you need? What would make you happy? What would delight you? It might be knowledge about how to make a product, and that knowledge is going to go be sent to the factory. That's the process piece of lean product and process development. It might so that you are getting a product that the factory can make easily and will be a product that doesn't fall apart, right? True. Customers might be interested in paying for, or will be interested in paying for, knowledge that you develop about a new product that really delights them, that really serves a need that they didn't even know that they had. But they really are not interested in R&D. And I'd say that as a customer myself. You know, I don't care how much money Apple spends on developing a new phone. I just want a new phone that works and has cool new gizmos on it.
Right. That's right.
Right. So we can't think about value in the same way. If we looked at value as being only what the customer will pay for, we would just get rid of research and development. We wouldn't have any new products. But of course, the world needs new products. And I think the world desperately now, today, needs all sorts of new products because we're living in such a new world. We're living in a world where we have to be much more environmentally conscious. So we need products that are much more, that have much less impact on the environment. We have a horrible pandemic that we're dealing with. So we need all kinds of new products to help us deal with the pandemic. And I'm not just talking about vaccines and treatments. I'm talking about, you know, products for students in school, for pupils in school. I'm talking about products for teachers. I'm talking about personal protective equipment. I'm talking about Zoom. You know, Zoom is a product, right? This is a product that we are all using and needing, and we want that innovation. So product development is incredibly important, but we can't measure value in the same way. And that means we have to look at how we do lean improvement in a different way. And we have to focus on the flow of knowledge, creating new knowledge, what happens to the knowledge, and what we're learning, with the understanding that customers don't really care about our flow of knowledge. What they care about is you giving me a great product that solves my need. So that was kind of a long answer, but as I said, I could talk about this for years.
No, and very interesting. And Bella, how would you describe the relationship then between lean thinking and creative thinking?
Creative thinking is about being able to apply two other types of thinking. One type of thinking in creative thinking is divergent thinking. So divergent thinking is what we often think of as being creativity. You know, the person who just has lots and lots and lots of ideas. You know, they're spinning off ideas. They see something and they think, and their brain works, and all of a sudden they think, oh, we could do that differently. We can make it bigger, smaller. What if we turned it inside out? We could do a blue one. You know, that sort of creative divergent thinking. And then there is convergent thinking. Convergent thinking is where you take lots of ideas and options and you pick the one that you want to move forward with. So in lean, we're always working through a plan, do, check, act cycle. And in the lean, every step in that process has opportunities to think divergently, to think broadly, to not stop thinking right away, and has opportunities for convergent thinking, which is where we select and make decisions and decide what we're going to do next. Now, in my experience, I have found that a lot of people who get into lean and lean thinking are really good at the convergent thinking. They love the tools that help them pick, select, you know, their Pareto charts. They love their, they love their risk matrices. They love every tool that helps them pick. But they often are not as comfortable in the divergent thinking space. Well, now, if we need new products, we need better new products in the world, we're going to have ideas, and we're going to have to know how to come up with ideas, how to build ideas, and in addition to selecting ideas and moving them forward. So I actually think within the plan, do, check, act cycle, I think about a little heartbeat happening all the time. And inside, and that heartbeat is, and you can't see my hands because this is audio, but is an opening up, just as your heart opens up and fills with blood. And that opening up is the divergent thinking. And then the other part of the heartbeat is the is the is the selection, the narrowing, and sort of the closing up, just as the second phase of your heartbeat beats, and that is the convergent thinking. And the way I look at it is that divergent thinking and convergent thinking are happening all the time within a plan, do, check, act learning cycle. But often, particularly those of us, you know, who got into this, you know, from a perhaps a quality perspective, are much stronger in the convergent thinking. We like that better. And the, so that can lead to, you know, cutting out or cutting short the divergent thinking stage. So it's, you know, I think it's intrinsic, but it's easy to forget.
So what would you consider to be the fundamentals to success when applying lean in product development? And are there any particular pitfalls that people should be aware of?
The fundamental to success in applying lean in product development is to get comfortable with the idea that you're going to fail. Because you're going to be trying new things, you're going to be doing a lot of experiments, and you want to be able to get used to failing. The pitfall that you see in normal product development is that you don't plan how and when to fail, and then you can see spectacular failures late in product development, or especially embarrassingly when the product's on the market. And, you know, there are so many, you know, stories about that. In New Coke, you know, is a great example. You know, issues that, you know, major companies have had putting new products out and nobody wants them, nobody buys them, they don't work, they fall apart, right? You know, so we're all familiar with those stories. And that's because the failure, which could have happened earlier in the product development process, has happened later. And that's because you've gotten focused on dates as opposed to getting focused on building knowledge, right? So that's the pitfall of normal product development, or the way that we usually do product development. The pitfall, I think, with lean product development is that it's hard for people to understand what you really have to do, because a lot of what you need to do in lean product development seems really counterintuitive to the way that we've been trained to work. So if you think about the way that we've been trained to work in terms of project management traditionally has been all about you set a goal, you decide what are the steps to the goal, you put them on a Gantt chart, you resource it, and then you follow the steps. Well, in product development, because there are opportunities for failure, and you can learn things that change your path, you can spend a lot of time, you know, trying to catch up, and then you're late, and then you're putting a lot of resources on the end. When you say to somebody, hey, you don't have to do that, right? What you should be focusing on right now is trying to understand what's critical to get this product on the market, and designing experiments and running experiments to find out whether you can overcome those critical issues and do that early. People, it just feels so counterintuitive to how people have been taught to work that they really back away and they say, but you're asking me to do more work. You're asking me to do more work now. You're not really. You're always going to do that big push at the end in traditional product development, but just saying, take some of that energy, some of that resource, and do it earlier, right? But it feels really counterintuitive. And I think that's the big pitfall with lean product development, is that almost everything that you think you know about how you run a project, how you do something, you probably need to do it differently. And that's a lot of learning and change for an organization to go through. And it's very difficult for management to understand that. It's difficult for finance to understand that. You know, it's difficult for the people who built up a project management department to understand that. It's a culture change. And it's true for other, you know, for other lean deployments as well. It's a culture change. And so the pitfall is you're going to have to shift to really working differently. It's going to be a very different culture. That's hard. That is really hard. I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah, it's hard to get everyone on board, which might tie in a little bit with the next question, Bella. Like in your book, you discuss the struggles employees can have to create innovative change and how management then struggle to help them. Can you explain what you mean by innovative change and why it's such a struggle for some?
By innovative change, and this is about sort of a whole organization view, not just research and development or marketing or manufacturing. It's about the whole organization. What I mean is that there are lots of good ways to do things, right? And you can learn so much from other companies about how they do something. But you're in a very specific situation in your organization. What works for other companies may or may not work for you. You may need to come up with your own way of doing something. And so innovative change is applying those principles I talked about earlier about really thinking divergently and then thinking convergently as you were deciding what you're going to do, not just stopping with, you know, what you saw another company do, not just stopping with the first idea that somebody came up with, but continuing to build ideas and continuing to develop them. And so in Lean, you know, we look at Toyota, and this is something that happens a lot, is people want to find out, well, how does Toyota do something? And they will go and they'll visit a Toyota plant, they're very generous, and they will see something and they go, wow, that's really nifty, right? It's really great. We're gonna take that and we're gonna take that back to where we work. Well, they go and do that, and maybe they get some benefit from it. It's a good thing to do. 2 years later, they go back to Toyota. They find Toyota's doing something completely different. Well, why is that? Because Toyota understands that they need to continually be looking at the situation, see what's changing, and encouraging ideas from people about how do we address the current situation, not just copying what other companies do. Now, do they borrow from other companies? Of course they do. But they include that in, you know, in a set of ideas that they evaluate and do experiments with. So innovative change is not just borrowing from another company. It's not just taking a Lean tool and applying it and ta-da, you're done. It's about continually making sure that you understand that the situation is probably changing, that things are different. You have to come up with new ideas and you've got to be able to experiment with them rapidly so you can put them in play. And then when they don't work anymore, you do the next one. So that's really difficult for managers, because managers often get to be managers because they're good at something technically and they know how to do things. And now we're saying to them, we really want you to manage differently. What we want you to do, rather than knowing how to do things and telling people how to do things, is to be working with your employees and encouraging them to solve problems, coming up with a wide range of ideas, some of which might not be ideas that you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And that means that you are going to have to get used to listening to ideas that you're not comfortable with, giving people a safe space to experiment with them, and then allowing them to run those experiments and learn from those experiments. Now, you're always going to want to, you know, manage that in such a way that it's safe to do that. But at the same time, being a manager is nothing like what you expected it to be. So again, it's about culture change. And it's about the manager themselves starting to get comfortable with the idea that the great idea may not come from them. The great idea may come from somebody else. The great idea may be something that makes them uncomfortable. But at the same time, for the benefit of the company, you know, for the benefit of the customer, they need to learn to deal with it and be happy with seeing the creativity of their employees.
Bella, you've spoken a lot about the fact that you're very focused on creative solutions. Can you give us an example of some of these solutions?
Oh, yeah. So and I've been thinking a lot about PowerPoint. I've come to the conclusion that there's a lot of time spent on developing PowerPoint. I don't know if you noticed that, but I've noticed that people spending a lot of time developing PowerPoint, and now we, you know, we hire agencies to create PowerPoint for us, and we can't talk to somebody unless we're showing PowerPoint. And I was working with somebody several weeks ago, and she said, "Oh, I never used PowerPoint." I was like, "You never use PowerPoint? How, you know, this is, you know, somebody who speaks internationally." It's like, "Well, but we all use PowerPoint." And she said, "Oh no, I just draw pictures." I thought, "Wow, that's crazy." And then I ran into that sort of that cognitive dissonance. Well, everybody uses PowerPoint. We all use PowerPoint. But if you think about it, if you stopped using PowerPoint, you would save thousands of hours. And some companies, I think, would save millions of hours, right? That they could be doing other things. And that's an idea, I think, that hasn't really, you know, moved forward yet. But I'll give you another idea, another situation. So we were working, and this is what I've got to talk about before, and you can have to edit all this out. So we were working, in my former company, we were working on helping the organization to be more innovative in departments that we thought, that people considered were not innovative. And we decided that, and this was an idea, you know, we decided that there should be some sort of innovation awards, right? And there were innovation awards already in the company, but they weren't broad. They didn't include the departments that people didn't normally consider to be innovative. So we ran a creativity session to talk about the innovation awards and how they might work. And in the context of that session, somebody put up a sticky on the wall, and it said, "It would be great if we had all-powerful swords." And so we looked at that and we thought, that's really a strange thing to say. What do you mean by that? And that's always the important question. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, it turned out what the person meant he thought it would be very cool if at the next science fair, and the company sort of, you know, has these science fairs where people show projects that were going on, that we went around and we gave sort of special secret ninja awards to projects that we thought were unusual, not projects that were fantastic scientifically, but projects that were unusual. And so we took that and we ran with that, and so we gave these sort of secret ninja awards. We put I think ribbons on the posters, and it created an energy that we haven't seen before, you know, because people were not, well, you know, what's going on? So it was something that was really out of left field. It was not our normal way of working. And it created an energy that I think went on to people thinking about what are some other unusual things we can do.
Yeah.
So, and in a normal situation, if somebody said that, well, it'd be great if we had, you know, we had these all powerful swords. What's wrong with you? Go away. This is a company. We, you know, we're in business. We don't do that kind of stuff.
True.
But you just don't know where the idea is going to come from. And the important thing is that you don't kill it.
Exactly. Yeah. But that you listen to it, no matter how, you know, off the wall it may seem initially. They're two great examples. And I have to say, you really perked my interest when you started talking about creative solutions around PowerPoint and the hours wasted, the man hours wasted on PowerPoint presentations. So that's certainly one I'd love to look into a little bit further. I can imagine drawings would really get people to listen to you and engage more. Will we all have to become incredible artists to pull off that feat?
I think stick figures work just as well.
Okay, it sounds good. Bella, thank you so much for all that information. It's a fascinating topic, and thanks for coming on to talk to us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been my pleasure.
To learn more about Lean, please visit leadingedgegroup.com and follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook for updates on this podcast series or the wider Lean industry. This podcast series was produced by Clodagh Zeb McCarthy for the Leading Edge Group, and is available on all major podcast platforms.